Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, March 28, 2022. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Someone needs to mute out here. Okay, let's see. We're going to pick up on our Bible reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John, and we're in John chapter 3, read by Alexander Scorby.
Chapter 3. There was a man of the Pharisees named Nicodemus, a ruler of the Jews. The same came to Jesus by night and said unto him, Rabbi, we know that thou art a teacher come from God, for no man can do these miracles that thou doest except God be with him. Jesus answered and said unto him, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born again, he cannot see the kingdom of God. Nicodemus saith unto him, How can a man be born when he is old? Can he enter the second time into his mother's womb and be born? Jesus answered, Verily, verily, I say unto thee, except a man be born of water and of the Spirit, he cannot enter into the kingdom of God. That which is born of the flesh is flesh, and that which is born of the Spirit is spirit. Marvel not that I said unto thee, Ye must be born again.
Someone has an open mic out there.
The wind bloweth where it listeth, and thou hearest the sound thereof, but canst not tell whence it cometh and whither it goeth. So is every one that is born of the Spirit. Nicodemus answered and said unto him, How can these things be? Jesus answered and said unto him, Art thou a master of Israel, and knowest not these things? Verily, verily, I say unto thee, We speak that we do know, and testify that we have seen, and ye receive not our witness. If I have told you earthly things, and ye believe not, how shall ye believe if I tell you of heavenly things? And no man hath ascended up to heaven, but he that came down from heaven, even the Son of Man which is in heaven. And as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have eternal life. For God so loved the world, that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God sent not his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. He that believeth on him is not condemned, but he that believeth not is condemned already, because he hath not believed in the name of the only begotten Son of God. And this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For every one that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. After these things came Jesus and his disciples into the land of Judea, and there he tarried with them, and baptized. And John also was baptizing in Enon near to Salim, because there was much water there. And they came and were baptized, for John was not yet cast into prison. Then there arose a question between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purifying. And they came unto John and said unto him, Rabbi, he that was with thee beyond Jordan, to whom thou bearest witness, behold, the same baptizeth, and all men come to him. John answered and said, A man can receive nothing except it be given him from heaven. Ye yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but that I am sent before him. He that hath the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, which standeth and heareth him, rejoiceth greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This my joy, therefore, is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease. He that cometh from above is above all. He that is of the earth is earthly, and speaketh of the earth. He that cometh from heaven is above all. And what he hath seen and heard, that he testifieth, and no man receiveth his testimony. He that hath received his testimony hath set to his seal that God is true. For he whom God hath sent speaketh the words of God. For God giveth not the Spirit by measure unto him. The Father loveth the Son, and hath given all things into his hand. He that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life, and he that believeth not the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abideth on him.
Okay. Tonight, we're going to take another look. How am I coming through, by the way? Am I coming through okay, Terry?
Yes, you sound fine.
Okay, thank you. All right, we're going to take a look and pick up after where we left off last week. Last week, we looked at political parties and how they are truly our worst enemies. If anyone missed that particular program last week, you can find that up on our website, and you can find it also up on Rumble. We go to our Rumble page and you can find it up there. But on our website, you should be able to find it. I think it's under it's under today's issues. It's in a couple places. It's also, I think, under a Monday Night Call. But it's under today's issues. You come down to NLA Open Forum videos, and we posted it up here. NLA political parties are your worst enemies. And this was recorded last week, 3/21/22. And tonight we're going to look at the Bar Association. We saw last week how our political structure was totally destroyed by the political parties, who, by the way, were really empowered through legislation by the bar controlled legislation, I guess is the best way to put that. The Bar Association is the minions of the New World Order. Totally destructive. There's nothing that they do that isn't destructive. The more and more I look into what's going on with the bar, what they're teaching, they should be tried for treason. And we're going to see that a little bit tonight. We're going to read a couple of U.S. codes that will say that clearly, that the bar should be tried for treason. And, of course, all bar attorneys, they're really ignorant. They don't understand. They've been trained. They're true believers. They're true believers in the Roman law, that we're under Roman law or civil law or whatever they want to call it. They do call it Roman law, and they do call it civil law. The U.S. Supreme Court calls it civil law, and they don't have a problem calling it that. We are not under civil law. We never were under civil law. But we're going to see some amazing things tonight. I know we've looked at some of these things before in the past. Anybody who's bought the book, we've written quite a bit about this. And there's quite a bit up on our website about this. But anyway, tonight's open forum program will be posted also up on Rumble. I'm not posting every Monday night program, but only certain Monday night programs. Anybody that wants to listen to any of our Monday night programs, all you have to do is click on our weekly call. And as you can see, you can download the weekly call last week's, and we'll post this week's probably tonight or tomorrow. And you can find all of our open forums here. But any time that we have a situation where we're kind of instructing, and we are using the desktop in order to run through our program, so that it'll be video involved, and we will be posting that up on Rumble. But hopefully we'll be able to teach something and focus in on something every week. I also want to look, maybe in the very coming weeks, I want to look very strongly at a couple of things, really. Sovereignty is a main issue. I really want to look powerfully at that and really dig down deep into the sovereignty of we the people. And I also want to dig deep down into the difference between a republic and a democracy. In both occasions, I know Brent has brought up, and he's absolutely right, that there's only one real true sovereign. Of course, that is God Eternal. He's the sovereign of the universe, and there is none sovereign underneath him. But in the situation, which we will cover in another week, we'll lay out how God has given us authority, certain authority over the earth, over the land. And that brings us ultimately to control of our government. And we are sovereign over our government. The sovereign makes the law. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. So only the sovereign can do that, the sovereign king, and we, the people, are the sovereign king. But I'm not going to get too deep into that tonight. We're going to get into more detail on that. I think next week we're going to focus in on that particular subject matter. We also are going to take a look a little bit at the committeemen and the different powers and authorities of the committeemen and how they statutorized the committeemen and put them under controls of party bosses and how we don't have freedom, the ability to freely decide who our representative should be. That's totally decided by party bosses. I've been involved with the committeemen some years back, quite some time. We've done some great research on it. Again, I don't want to get too deep into that tonight. We will look at that in the future, in the next couple of weeks. It'll be one of the subject matters we'll be looking at. But tonight, okay, I want to look at the bar. I'm sure we've done something on the bar in the past, but I really wanted to give a good focus on this. And it is important that we understand we must get rid of political parties. If we are going to have government by consent, we cannot be controlled by other individuals. And political parties have controlled us. And again, we covered that very, very deeply last week. And anybody who missed that should go back and watch that. As we showed you, you can find it in a couple of places, once being on our website, the other up on Rumble. But tonight we're going to look at the American Bar Association, which must be disbanded for treason. And I do believe that certain individuals should be tried for treason on the bar level. A lot of these judges, in my opinion, should be tried for treason because they protect the whole system and they know the truth. They understand the truth. A government cannot create another government, and that's exactly what they have done. And we're going to look at that. I'm just going to read through this and try to get through this as quick as possible, but it's an extremely important subject matter. We'll take as much time as we have to. I'll try to get this done within, my time period, but we'll see what happens. The American Bar Association has seized control of our government at every single level, and with the aid of the deep state, whereas no decision is made, no law is passed, no issue is resolved without the seditious bar orchestrated legislation and control of our courts via the requiring of a law license intended to regulate our liberties and eventually abolish them, and the calling and stacking of grand and petty juries, all a necessity for the New World Order. In 1750, the British Bar was established in the colonies to abrogate the common law and suppress the beginning of the American Rebellion steered by Benjamin Franklin. In 1819, the original ratified 13th Amendment that prevented bar members from holding an office of trust was removed by the American Bar Association-controlled Congress and replaced with another sometime before 1865. The original 13th Amendment read, "If any citizen of the United States shall accept, claim, receive, or retain any title of nobility or honor," and that's the key, the title of honor is what we're looking at, not the title of nobility, the title of honor. The title of nobility, I understand, is also can be inherited from one to another. Title of honor is a different thing. A knight would have a title of honor. The bar attorneys, British bar attorneys, they have titles of honor. They're called esquires. And here in America, American Bar Association, they call these people esquires. So no title of nobility or honor from any emperor, king, prince, or foreign power, such person shall cease to be a citizen of the United States and shall be incapable of holding any office of trust or profit under them. Esquire is a title of honor. 1822, Treaty of Verona. The British monarch, and we're going to see how point by point, step by step, they destroyed they destroyed our Constitution, they destroyed our political process, they destroyed our judicial process, they created another government, as we're going to see under the Organic Act of 1871. But the Treaty of Verona, the British monarch and the Pope secretly agreed to undermine the American system of government via the Treaty of Verona. The British monarch breaches the Treaty of Ghent, and put the Pope and the King secretly, and both the Pope and the King secretly breached their trust as international trustees. They set out on a covert action and issued letters of marque and reprisal to the members of the Bar Association, allowing them to act as foreign agents on American soil and as privateers, free to plunder American commerce, also our judicial system and our political process. And they did that through the bar, of course, and the other through, of course, political parties. 1871, the Organic Act. The bar controlled 41st Congress under Section 34, Section 3, Chapters 61 and 62, created a foreign government state, within a city, forming a corporation called the United States, Inc., owned by foreign interest, moved in and shoved the original Constitution into the dustbin. 28 U.S.C. subsection 3002 defines 15, which would be paragraph 15, United States means a federal corporation. In 1871, in an act of high treason, the 41st Congress acted without constitutional authority, an act of fraud, conspiracy, and subversion against the United States of America, attempting to dispose our covenant with our Creator and thereby establishing a totalitarian government unaccountable to we, the sovereign people, under foreign control, behind the conspiratorial erosion of our Constitution, began. This transformed our unalienable rights to civil rights, our republic to a democracy, the United States to a corporation, and the laws of nature's God to civil and criminal laws, which have their roots in Babylon. This placed the United States under the fiction of law, and as long as the people believe the fiction to be law, it is. And we're going to see a little later that this is going to be confirmed by a congressman back in the 70s. I'm trying to think of his name, but we're going to come up to him in a few minutes. Anyway, in 1878, 75 lawyers established the ABA, the American Bar Association. Oh, one other thing I wanted to mention. Anybody who doubts this, okay, all you need to do is Google or whatever, Organic Act of 1871, look particularly at Chapter 61 and 62, and you will see that the Congress created a government. Very clearly, they created a government and put a governor in charge. Okay, and that governor controls Washington, D.C., and all of the District of Columbia. And ultimately, if you research through USC 26, you will see that all of the states have been put under the District of Columbia, all 50 states. You see, this is constructive law. This is what this is. And it's all started in 1871. By the time 1871 came around, they had control of our Congress. And they were pushing forward laws, lots of laws. 1878, 75 lawyers established the American Bar Association. It was founded on August 21st, 1878, in an act of high treason. 100 bar attorneys or lawyers from 21 states and the District of Columbia met in Saratoga Springs, New York, to establish the American Bar Association, the minions of the New World Order of the Ages. Since that first meeting, the ABA continued the work of the British Bar, working in the shadows, infiltrating our government, our courts, our churches, our institution, our medical services, our educational system, and our media, demoralizing our children, all in an effort to expunge the common law and replace it with civil law, also known as Babylonian law, or Justinian law, or Roman law. Most lawyers will tell you we're under Roman law. Most lawyers will tell you that we are framed as Rome was framed. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are framed as Israel was framed. Whereas common law is not precedent or legislated law where one size fits all. It is not civil law. Common law, also known as natural law, is governed by maxims written in the hearts, as we read in Romans chapter 2, verses 14 through 15. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts, the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. The Federal Rules of Civil Procedure govern civil procedure in the United States District Courts. The FRCP are promulgated by the United States Supreme Court pursuant to the 1934 Rules Enabling Act. In an act of treason exploiting the Rules Enabling Act by enacting treasonous uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. And that, of course, went down into the state courts. It's all the same thing. We do not have courts of justice. I'm sure from time to time we might get find ourselves in a judge where he is ruling or she is ruling properly, but that would be extremely rare, and I doubt they're going to exist very long as a judge if they continue on that thing, especially if they go up against the status quo. In 1910, conspiracy at Jekyll Island. In an act of high treason, six men, Nelson Aldrich, Abraham Andrew, Henry Davidson, Arthur Shelton, Frank Vanderlip, and Paul Warburg, met at the Jekyll Island Club off the coast of Georgia to write a plan to reform the nation's banking system. The meeting and its purpose were closely guarded secrets, and participants did not admit that the meeting occurred until 1930s. But the plan written on Jekyll Island laid a foundation for what eventually would be the Federal Reserve System created by the ABA-controlled Congress. 1913 Federal Reserve Act, the ABA-controlled Congress passed the unconstitutional Federal Reserve Act of 1913. That gave control of America's economy to a private corporation owned by foreign bankers who answer to no one and regulate the value of worthless notes of debt called the dollar. Robbed we the people of our gold, bankrupt America, a conspiracy among Paul Warburg, Edward Mandel House, Woodrow Wilson, J.P. Morgan, Benjamin Strong, Otto Kahn, the Rockefeller family, the Rothschild family, and other European and American bankers, which resulted in the founding of the U.S. Federal Reserve System, which resulted in the takeover of the U.S. economy on behalf of the oligarchs. The Federal Reserve Act of 1913 defies Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 5 of the United States Constitution by creating a central bank of issue for the United States. World War I, the Agricultural Depression of 1920, the Great Depression of 1929 were brought about by international bankers' interest in order to profit from conflict and economic instability, also to change the mindsets of people, to get them to accept things that they would not normally or naturally accept. 1922, Barr attempted to abolish grand juries. In March 1922, in an act of high treason, the New York County Association of the Criminal Bar announced that it planned a vigorous statewide campaign to abolish the grand jury institution. Former District Attorney Robert Elder called upon public prosecutors to take the initiative in replacing the inefficiency, ignorance of the traditional bias of grand juries, and Judge Thomas Crane of New York supported the movement. Testifying before the Committee of Law Enforcement of the American Bar Association, he observed that a judge or some other man learned in the statutes should participate in grand jury hearings. They teach that in school, by the way. My brother went to law school, and they taught him that, and he actually ran with that for a while, thinking, hey, the grand jury and the trial jury should be all lawyers. Couldn't you imagine that? Boy. In Minnesota, Attorney Paul J. Thompson urged the state to adopt the Wisconsin system of prosecution upon the order of district attorney. In 1922, Judge Roscoe Pound and Felix Frankfurter conducted a survey of criminal justice in Cleveland and added the weight of expert testimony to those who sought to eliminate the use of grand juries. Pound and Frankfurter reported that juries were inefficient and unnecessary since trial courts, politically driven men, were quite capable of protecting Americans against executive tyranny. And by the way, some states I heard, I think it's Louisiana, maybe another state or two, I don't know, but I know I heard there's a state or two out there, and I should look into this, that no longer use the jury system. I would definitely not want to live in that state. At least you have a chance here. 1933, War Powers Act. The ABA-controlled Congress passed the War Powers Act, also referred to as the War Power Resolution, or the War Powers Resolution of 1973, is a federal law that governs the president's power to bring the U.S. into an armed conflict without first obtaining authorization from Congress as required under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11. Only Congress can declare war. 1933 Emergency Banking Act, the ABA-controlled Congress dissolved the United States federal government through the Emergency Banking Act on March 9, 1933. Now, if you're following along here, you can see how they are constructing. You know, all law is constructive, okay, line upon line, precept upon precept, to build a point and to lay out the legality of something. And in this case, they're claiming to try to lay out the legality. It's hidden, it's covert. But if you look at it, it's plain English. You can see it. But they're laying out a process of a new government, and they have discharged the United States of America and threw out our Constitution. And anybody who finds themselves in court that goes up against the status quo, big corporation, big farmers, any of those things, or the government itself, you will find yourself very quickly that you do not have any constitutional, unalienable rights protected by the Constitution. 1933, Emergency Banking Act, ABA control Congress dissolved the United States federal government through the Emergency Banking Act on March 9th, 1933. 1933 gold confiscation. The ABA controlled administration through Executive Order 6102, President Franklin Roosevelt signed into law on April 5th, 1933, forbidding the holding of money, of gold, coins, gold bullion, and gold certificates by the people without the continental within the continental United States. Federal Reserve, all an astounding exposure, and Congressman McFadden on the Federal Reserve Corporation remarks in Congress 1934 on May 23, 1933. Congressman Louis T. McFadden brought formal charges against the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve Bank System, the controllers of the currency, and the Secretary of the United States Treasury of numerous criminal acts, including, not limited to, conspiracy, fraud, unlawful conversion, and treason, all orchestrated by the ABA, the American Bar Association. Whereas he said, Mr. Chairman, we have in this country one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever known. I refer to the Federal Reserve Board and the Federal Reserve Banks, hereinafter called the Fed. The United States has been ransacked and pillaged. Our structures have been gutted, and only the walls are left standing. The petition for articles of impeachment was therefore referred to the Judiciary Committee and has yet to be acted upon. 1934 Rules Enabling Act. The ABA-controlled Congress abrogated the law of the land and replaced it with civil law, giving the Supreme Court the power to make rules of procedure and evidence for the federal court in equity. But in 1938, the U.S. Supreme Court, on September 16, 1938, 8 of the 9 men, 1 resigned. The United States Supreme Court, steered by the subversive ABA, authored the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, particularly Rule 2, thereby committing an act of treason, where they said, and you can read this up on their website, by the way, where they said the Supreme Court enacted uniform rules of procedure for the federal courts. Under the new rules, suits in equity and suits in common law were grouped together under the term civil law. We no longer have natural law. We no longer have courts of justice. We have civil law. We have Roman law. We have Babylonian law. Claiming that a rigid application of common law rules brought about injustice, also known as civil law. Bretton Woods Agreement. The United States, steered by the subversive ABA, surrendered to the central banking system. The prevailing economic system of the world is based on the Bretton Woods Agreement, which was established after the Second World War. While all the countries thought that the economics of the world would boost and the people would have more money in their hands, little did they know that it was just a plan to destroy the currencies of the world by making the dollar the currency anchor of the world. And that's starting to collapse today. You're going to be watching the news. 1947, CIA and NSA. The ABA-controlled Congress created the National Police State Surveillance Grid. In 1950, report on the National Lawyers Guild revealed that ABA communist plot to destroy America. Nothing has been done. That was the Reese Committee. In 1954, Internal Revenue Code created by the ABA-controlled Congress provided for an unlawful tax on personal income and created a debtor's prison for those who refused to pay such a slave tax. In 1954, the Dodd Report to the Reese Committee on Foundations Concerning Un-American Activities in Government. The findings of the Reese Committee were very revealing. It was found out that big foundations, structured and steered by the ABA, remember, lawyers control all this. They set all this up. They make it legal. They get the legislation through to get it all done. And they're just putting us into a statutory prison. Steered by the ABA, were promoting internationalism and collectivism. By their subversive funding activities, they posed a clear threat to our American Republic and the way of life. The foundations were monumental in shaping the education and the foreign policy of the United States. And not only this, but the foundation had their presence in all areas of society, in some areas that had become more powerful than the federal government. Research and experimental stations were established at selected universities, notably Columbia, Stanford, and Chicago. Here, some of the worst mischief in recent education was born in these Rockefeller and Carnegie established vineyards. Worked many of the principal characters in the story of the stubborning of American education. Here, foundations nurtured some of the most ardent academic advocates of upsetting the American system and supplanting it with a socialist state. 1971, Southern Poverty Law Center. In acts of high treason and lies, the SPLC intelligence report proclaimed to be the nation's preeminent periodical monitoring the radical right in the United States, is fueling all government agencies and police departments in believing that anyone that uses specific words like militia, sovereign, oath keepers, constitution, patriots, or even founding fathers, to name just a few, are armed, radical, and dangerous cop killers whose names are put on terrorist watch lists. This agitation often causes police to overreact with excessive force and on a few occasions respond by SWAT when these words are used at traffic stops. Much of the overreaction that fueled the police comes from that spewed forth lies of the Southern Poverty Law Center to unsuspecting law enforcement agencies and departments. The SPLC is an arm of the bar whose purpose is to excite violence by federal agents and police upon we, the sovereign people, who are trying to make sense of our out-of-control federal judiciary and be free. And James Traficant, that was the congressman whose name I was trying to remember, James Traficant, 1993, his bankruptcy speech on the floors of Congress. And he ended up in jail, by the way. He was released a while back and died not long after he came out of jail. So they set him up. Speaker Representative James Traficant Jr. of Ohio, addressing the House, revealing the bankruptcy of the United States into the congressional record. All United States offices, officials, and departments are now operating under a de facto status in name only under the Emergency War Powers. You can see how they put this together. Again, all law is constructive, line upon line, precept upon precept to create. They've been creating this prison piece by piece over the years. With a constitutional Republican form of government now dissolved, it's gone, the receivers of the bankruptcy have adopted a new form of government for the United States. This new form of government is known as a democracy, being an established socialist communist order under a new governor for America. That's referring to the Organic Act of 1871. What was it? Section 62 and 63, I think it was. U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 3. Treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to the enemy, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. USC Code, subsection 2385. And these are the codes that we can get these people on. These are the codes that they have violated. Very specifically, subsection 2385 out of 18 USC. Listen to what it says. Advocating the overthrow of the government. When they took away our law, law and equity, which is the law of the land, right out of our Constitution, and just cast that away and created civil law and just created all these laws, and that's what we're under. There is no Bill of Rights that they look at. They don't care about that. It's pretty serious in the courts, and I've been in enough courts to know and see all the treasonal acts that these people have committed, and they just don't care. They deserve the death penalty. They deserve to end at the end of a short rope. And listen, here's the layout. Whoever with intent to cause the overthrow or destruction of the government, and you can see how they constructively done this, and this isn't all of this, this is just a few pieces here and there. There is a lot more. It's way too much to cover in one evening. Territory, district, or possession thereof, or the government of any political subdivision therein. If they print, publish, edit, issue, circulates, sell, distributes, or publicly displays any written or printed matter advocating, advising, or teaching. They have law schools teaching this. The duty, necessity, desirability, or propriety of overthrowing or destroying any government in the United States by force or violence or attempts to do so shall be fined under this title or imprisoned, not more than 20 years or both, and shall be ineligible for employment of the United States or any department or agency thereof for 5 years next following his conviction. So the Bar Association teaches these things. They teach the destruction of our Constitution. Again, we've just been reading through all the laws that they've been pushing through, and this is what they teach. All these lawyers are true believers. They have no idea what common law is. They have no idea what our heritage is and what liberty truly is. No idea whatsoever. And I've talked to a number of them. They are totally ignorant. They're morons, as a matter of fact. Very rarely have I met a lawyer that could even speak well when you start discussing these things. I mean, they just get lost. They have no clue. USC 18 U.S.C. 2381, treason. Whoever owing allegiance to the United States, and who will owe allegiance to the United States? These judges, they owe allegiance. These lawyers, they owe an allegiance to the United States. They take an oath. Levies war against them or adheres to the enemy, giving them aid and comfort within the United States or elsewhere, is guilty of treason and shall suffer death, or shall be imprisoned not more than 5 years and fined not less than 5 years, and fined under this title, but not less than $10,000, and shall be incapable of holding any office under the United States. We need to get rid of the Bar Association. Simple task. Once we get past on the other side of devolution, this is a simple task. We can move it into the courts. We're already preparing the paperwork for this. But, you know, we do need the people behind us. We need to continue to build committees of safety. We need to get enough people to press upon across this nation, in every single county in America, we need people working to do what they need to do on the grassroots level and supporting this movement. In conclusion, the truth is that the Revolutionary War never ended. It only continued covertly. Whereas the British Bar worked tirelessly to destroy the United States, until in 1871 the Deep State was firmly established in Washington, D.C., and the traitorous British Bar transformed into the American Bar Association in 1878. We have been living in a well-crafted fiction that has changed our republic into a democracy, our common law into a civil law, our unalienable rights into privileges, our law courts into chancery courts, all while the people are totally unaware they have lost control of their own government because they have no memory of these things. A paradigm shift from fiction to reality is imminent. We stand at the precipice with a window of opportunity to take back control of our government. In order to be transformed from slavery to liberty, we must abolish the traitorous political parties of the American Bar Association. And this can only be accomplished by the people through committees of safety. That window of opportunity is very short. It's coming up. We have this year to work on it and get it complete and get enough people involved to do something about this. Because at some point when this power vacuum comes in, when these people are arrested and a lot of things take place and the whole thing's being restructured, if the people don't take the power and the authority back, somebody will. Someone must fill that power void, that power structure. I heard an interview with General Flynn on X-22, Dave interviewed General Flynn, and one of the things he said is that it's the people's duty. They need to step up. The patriots must step up. You know, joining the service and becoming a veteran or whatever the case may be and fighting for your country is one fashion. But it is up to all of us to step up and do something. The people on the grassroots level, he said, needs to get up and do something. Now, he doesn't know what to tell them to do. We know what to tell the people to do. That's what we're teaching here at National Liberty Alliance. Now, these people, as he said, they need to get up. They need to get connected to the committees, committeemen. They need to get involved and go to the voting booths and watch and be watchers and stuff. But that is not going to accomplish the problem because they stand there and they have no power and authority. They cannot do nothing. But we, the people, can. United we stand, divided we shall fall. Now, I was looking in to see how many committees of safety we have created so far and put together. And remember, the committees of safety are free and independent groups of people. The purpose of National Liberty Alliance is only to inform the people of their heritage. We're here to educate, to teach, to communicate, and to pass things back and forth and get them educated and come to an understanding. And, of course, by going to our website at nationallibertyalliance.org, you'll see education starts here, and you'll see start a committee of safety there, here. Now, these are the two major tabs that people should really be paying attention to. There's a lot of information on this site, lots of education, the higher education greater than what we offer even on our regular courses. We have quite a few courses under our educational tab. We have a foundational study. We have a constitutional course, 101 introduction. We have a free civics course. We have government by consent course. We have a militia course. And we have certificates of completion for those who are interested for those courses. We also have a jury administrator's accredited course. Anybody becoming a jury administrator needs to take all these courses and definitely the last one. But in any event, those are educational processes that people need to be going through. We have tremendous amounts of information. Follow through here on Education Starts Here and on the directory. But get back to the committees of safety and where we are at this point. I'm going to be talking and addressing, hopefully soon, all of our district leaders to make sure that we're all on the same page and that we are addressing and contacting the individuals who are out there stepping up to start committees of safety. It turns out since we started this, we have 77 committees of safety in process of creation. Some of them are full speed and moving along, and some of them are just beginning. But whatever they are, people need to get involved. You, the people, have a duty. Everybody that hears this message today and the message that NLA delivers has a duty. Once they know the truth, you have a duty. We have to save America, and it's up to you to do that. And you should be looking up your state to see your county and your states. And real quick, let me just show you where you can find that. You can go to the directory and find it there. You can find it under Start a Committee of Safety. So you can go down here and click on Find Your District Leaders. You can also find district leaders under directory, the same page you get to. We broke the United States up into 10 districts. And so we have a district leader in each one of these 10 districts. And they're responsible to communicate and give information to anybody interested in starting a committee of safety. As a matter of fact, I think they should be designated as the Committee of Correspondence for National Liberty Alliance. Now, we work and strive very, very hard not to get involved with the people's work that they do on a county level. We want them to be free and independent. We want them to have as much education as we can possibly give them, information concerning the treason and how we can fix the problem. I'm going to be creating a page concerning how to address and deal with individuals who are running for office, what kind of questions, what kind of things they should know. I'm going to put a page together and maybe even a little booklet. I'm not too sure yet on how we're going to do that, but we will do something that will be found under Start a Committee of Safety. Once we put it together, we'll probably do a Monday night synopsis of it. So anyway, here's your district leaders. If you live, for instance, in Washington or Oregon, then you're in District 1. And so on throughout the United States here. So your district leader is Mel. There's the phone number. You can give that person a call. Ask for assistance. They'll try to connect you with other people in your state and give you as much information as possible. You know, they're all on a learning curve, too, as much as anyone else. We're all on a learning curve. So we'll do the best we can. If they don't have the answers and they can't find the answers, they can bring it to you, to the national leadership here. They are part of the national leadership, of course, but they can bring it here to Monday night. And if myself or Brent or Gerard doesn't have an answer, we will research it out and get that answer. But it is important that we work together, that we develop these committees of safety. So anyway, you come down to your state. Let's just take, for instance, we'll just take, let me take New York, okay? If you click on New York and you're interested in New York, you go down here and you click on New York, and you can see Albany, Broome, Dutchess, Niagara and Wayne counties all have started committees of safety. So you can make the contact with the individual. The phone numbers are up here. You can make contact with that person and connect. If your county isn't listed up here, then all you have to do is click on and, goodness, Jan, do you remember how it is that they connected us? I'll have to look into that. I don't remember. Edit group. Okay, anyway, you can join. Maybe it's the page before. Click here to find, choose a state, for more information, organize in your county. Let me click on that, see where that takes us. That's a synopsis of the overall plan. Okay, in any event, we'll work on that. Maybe hopefully before the next program's over, we'll make a note on where you, how you can connect and get your name up there. But in any event, if your county has not been started, click on, join and become the contact for your county. You can pass it to someone else at a later time if you really don't want to take the leadership role. That's fine. But at least one person will start it. You meet for, a cup of coffee somewhere with another individual that's interested. You could do it online, whatever, however you want to do it, on a telephone. And you can have meetings, short meetings, and ideas and past information. Next thing you know, you got 3, 4, 5. As soon as you have 6, 7, 8 people, or even less, it doesn't matter, but you have a few people together, now's the time to get your first meeting going and invite as many people as you can. You contact as many liberty groups as possible that within your county, or even counties next door, you can invite them too. Maybe they'll spark up in their county and get things started. But in any event, as I mentioned, I went through the list, and hopefully we'll be giving reports on this as time goes on. We have 77 total committees of safety in process or in progress. Okay, District 1, we have 3. Matter of fact, state by state, you can go through this and you can find how many is in the state. One of the biggest states is Florida. It has 10 committees of safety already moving along here. Where else? Here, California has 8. Okay, they have 8 committees of safety moving forward. So again, people need to get involved in this. And you can find your contact information of your district leader, again, on that page under the directory. So 77, but we need 777. We have 3,133 counties approximately in the United States. We need at least a couple of thousand counties, really, by the time we really start to move forward, at least in the process of being created, because that's power. And remember, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And right now, the majority that actually participates is 5 individuals in every county. That's the county leadership, the county chairman, the co-chairman, the secretary, the treasurer, and there's another one there, but there's 5, I believe. And, co-chair. Okay, so you got 5 individuals, and for instance, my county has 248 slaves working for those 5 individuals. Actually, if you remove the 5, because they're part of those 5, of those 249 election districts. So there's 249 committeemen in the Republican Party here in Dutchess County, New York. So there's 144 slaves working for 5 individuals who make all the decisions. And ultimately, of course, all the decisions come from the upper end when they come together. They're given their marching orders and who's going to go on to the ticket, whether it's the criminal on this side on the right or the criminal on the other side on the left. It doesn't matter, because when we get around to actually making the final decision at the general election, generally speaking, they're all criminals. They really don't care who gets elected. Okay? So I'd like to see this grow. I'm going to push for reports to come up every so often by the district leaders, that they come on and tell us a little something. Maybe they can let the people know that they're working with to get committees of safety going, to get them to our meetings, and maybe they can pipe in some ideas and thoughts and what they have added to the system that we put together, and maybe we can add that to our book and give people more information. But we need to inform each other, we need to educate each other, and we need to step up and take control. That's what we need to do. Okay, I've kind of exhausted most of my time. I'm going to hang out with... Is Gerard here, by the way? Terry, Jan, Gerard here? And do we have any questions or any announcements?
Why does somebody paint it?
He's here. Yeah, we have questions, too.
Okay, how many questions?
Oh, 5, 6, 7.
Let's see what we can do.
On your question of how do you sign up to become an organizer,
mm-hmm.
you go to the directory and then click on, scan down and click on NLA Organizing Your County. It's under the district leader listing.
Okay,
and
over here.
Click on that.
Oh, right here? Organizing Your County? Okay. We're going to need to make that a little more obvious. Go ahead. Step-by-step
yeah,
organization.
Scan down
handbook.
On that page, and there's a clicker for find or register your COS here.
Right here. Okay. All right. We need to highlight that. I'll try to find some time to get in here this week and figure a way to make this a little clearer on how they can register a committee of safety. And remember, anybody who registers a committee of safety, if someone else wants to come in and take control, they can come up and register too, put their number up there, and you can leave your number up there too if you want, or you can remove your name at that point and let that other individual. There could be more than one person as a contact for any county. You know, one of the things is, again, as I mentioned, you know, there's in my county, let's say, there's 249 committeemen in Dutchess County, okay? That's what controls the political process. And ultimately, like I said, it's the leadership that controls it. They're all enslaved to the leadership. They don't do the will of the county chair and kiss his ring. They're out of there. And so that proves the fact that they're not even elected. But when they codified this, they controlled, they took it under control. We need to take it back. The true committeeman is the committees of safety. That's the true committeeman. And that'll be a subject matter, too, that we'll look a little deeper into one of these Monday evenings. Let's get to any of these questions.
Okay, the first questions pertain to fishing and boating. First question is, apparently this person lives in Ohio, and there were no fees for boat ramps on state ramps until a couple years ago. He could see paying a fee for private ramps, but do I have to pay to use state ramps?
I don't understand what he's talking about. What ramps?
State boat launching ramps. You know.
State boat?
You know, on a lake or on a river, they have ramps set up where you can back your boat in.
Oh, okay.
On a trailer.
Yeah.
And drop it off. Now, should you have to pay for state boat launching ramps or just private ones?
Well, that's a good question. In any event, if it's a commercial activity, it should be governed by the state legislature to make sure the rules and everything are in place in order for it to operate properly. Of course, we need people that aren't there to rip the people off and make a zillion dollars. So I would think, of course, because it would become a commercial activity of someone providing that or the state providing that, that there might be a cost, of course. I don't see how to get away from that. I don't know if anybody else has a thought on that, but that's my thinking at the moment. I haven't researched it, so I really can't conclude. Next question.
Is it necessary to buy Ohio number stickers that expire every 3 years for your boat?
I guess that's to make sure it's in proper order and so on and so forth. It's like an inspection for a car type thing, I presume.
I'm not sure it has to be inspected. They just want you to pay the money and get the sticker and put it on your boat so they can identify it. I don't think they inspect it.
Again, I don't see the necessity for that in the one hand. If you're on a boat and you're running up the rivers or whatever, wherever you're traveling with that boat, there may be something there in commercial activities or control. I don't have enough knowledge on those things. I'd have to research it, but I would suspect that there probably is and probably should be some legislative control, but it should be fair. And I don't know why a lot of this stuff, if it's a state thing, they shouldn't be charging for anything. But if it's someone that's doing something that's giving access and is spending money to give that access in some way as a commercial activity, of course, there's something going on there, and that has to be under control. But I don't have enough knowledge in those things to conclude any of it.
The next question is, am I able to unregister my boat, motor, and trailer with the state? Can I put some sort of private license on a boat, like on a car?
If you don't mind sitting in jail from time to time, you can do that. But the possibility of going to jail, and that is there. Again, I don't really have an answer. I would not advise anyone not to do that. I mean, I have a driver's license, for instance. I need to drive, and I don't want to keep going to jail on that. Although I think my town finally realizes I'm not paying their bills no more because I challenged them, and they've left me alone. And I've been stopped twice since then by local police officers, and they let me go. So they didn't give me any tickets. So hopefully, at least in my town, I've concluded with them. But I still have a driver's license, and it's a great idea anyway on the one hand. We shouldn't have to pay for them if we have them for a purpose of identification. And also, if I want to do some commercial activities, you know, drive a commercial vehicle or something for some reason or another, which I have done many times in the past, I have a commercial, I have a license to be able to do that commercially. So my license, I don't mind having it. I think they charge too much money, and I don't think they should be charging anything. But in any event, you know, it is a problem. Once we get on the other side of devolution, we'll try to settle it. That's something the people have to debate, and that's something where the committees of safety can come together within their states and talk about these issues and see how once they want to push legislation. But they have to be serious to look into the necessities of certain things. Sometimes there is a necessity to do things, you know. I mean, red lights and green lights are great things, but if you're coming up and you're hearing the crickets in the middle of 3 o'clock in the morning and there's nobody around, let's go, you know. You don't need to sit at that red light. But the point is, they're kind of good ideas, of course, but again, we have to use logic and we have to make certain considerations. A ticket is something for commercial activity only, not for we the people. If you put someone's life in danger, you know, that could be a serious thing and something might need to be done. But other than that, you know, next question.
On fishing licenses, are they necessary for fishing the Great Lakes? The reason for the question is I'm not sure of Lake Erie's jurisdiction. Maritime, or is it still on the land jurisdiction?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, people shouldn't have to pay for fishing at all. I know if you're an Indian, you don't need a license to fish. And I understand maybe even hunt, too. I'm not sure on that. But I know for fishing, if you're an Indian, you don't need a license. Well, Indian or not, I don't think anyone needs a license. You want to go eat, and you need some food, and you want to go fishing to get that food. That's your business, and no one should be able to stop you. Now, hunting, there may be some kind of an idea with hunting so that they can keep a count on the animals, the deer, and making sure that they're not all killed off and, you know, wiped out or whatever the case may be. So there's some kind of logic there. But the people of the state, through the committees of safety, they can come together, discuss these things, look into the reasoning behind these things, and discuss on what they think should happen. And remember, you know, the committees of safety control all individuals that are elected. Once the transformation from the power and the authority from the statutory committeemen transfers over to the free and independent committeemen, we the people, okay, and we take in that power, we now control Congress. And we're going to make a page of a list of things that people need to think about and consider as they deal with their representatives, requiring certain things of them, like a proper education to begin with, an understanding and a connection with, for instance, the Republic Review. I don't want to go too deep into that because I think we're going to pick up on a subject matter in the future on this kind of an issue. But anyway, next question.
Okay, you made a point last week about the people's sovereignty over government per scripture. Can both you and Brent please talk more about the basis for that? We've been encountering a renewed effort to counter the common law effort through arguments made from that one verse in Romans, and a lot of the newer crowd are buying into it. It would be
now,
great.
Now, one verse, which verse? The one I read tonight?
No. Well, unless it's the same one you read last week.
Do you have it?
You read last week.
Do you know what it is?
John, it said Romans. They didn't put the verse down.
Okay, let me see if I can find it. Control, find, Romans.
Usually when people are talking about Romans, it's the part that says that you should obey the government. And they take that out of context, and they basically
on the ABA schools, but that was, that was tonight. I quoted Romans chapter 2, verses 14 through 15. Let me see what else I can find. which talks about written in the hearts of men. I'm not sure of any other Romans that I had put up.
There's a Romans chapter that the government likes to quote and have the clerics.
Yeah, but I didn't bring that up. Be obedient to the government or the powers there be, right, or something like that.
Right.
We could talk about that in the future. I don't want to talk about it now because my time is really limited. I'm going over right now, so I want to, you know, we can take a look at that. But I will be talking about sovereignty, and we'll be bringing some scripture into that also. A lot of Founding Father quotes and Supreme Court quotes and a lot of different things on sovereignty, so that there's no misunderstanding. You know, as Gerard had brought up a couple of weeks ago when discussing this idea with Brent, and he talked about a clipped sovereignty for those people that are elected, for instance, our legislators. They have a clipped sovereignty. The president has a clipped sovereignty. States have a clipped sovereignty. Right now, the states have no sovereignty at all. They're dead. They've been done. Their sovereignty has been taken away by the 17th Amendment about 100 years ago. But that clipped sovereignty makes the point that it's limited. And we, the people, have to some degree a clipped sovereignty also, and we're above the Constitution, for we the people authored the Constitution. We ordained and established the Constitution. So we're above the Constitution. Those individuals that are elected or employed by the government, they're under the Constitution. They must be obedient to the Constitution and also the legislation that is put forward, that is lawful legislation, that is defined by what legislation they may write under Article 1, Section 8, which is a total of 17 plus 1, 18 powers. The 18th power is the power to write law for the 17. And so when we see what took place, for instance, as we saw tonight, in the Rules Enabling Act, not the Rules Enabling Act, in the Organic Act of 1871, where they created a government within a government, and actually that government became above the government. They put a governor in place. They created a government. Well, my question to the legislators who did this, okay, everybody's hand off of that, please.
Hey, John, while we're disrupted, while we're disrupted, and no, my fingers weren't on the button, just to let you know, you have more time tonight because Brent is traveling and will not be on the call, so you have more time.
Great. So I'll pass things to Gerard shortly, and maybe I'll pipe in on some of the answers.
Okay.
But, okay, thank you. Okay, so anyway, I've lost my train of thought, so I'm not sure where I was. Oh, 1873, was it?
One.
71, thank you. Organic Act, yes, where they created a government. Tell me where in the Constitution, where the powers that we gave to Congress, 17 powers, where is it that the government can create a government? Only we, the people, can create a government that's lawful, okay? We have the only lawful government in the world, by the way, because we're under common law, and we're authorized by God. No other government is authorized by God, none at all. Although God does raise up powers and he brings down powers, he'll use one power to judge another power and, you know, all that other stuff. That's clear in the Bible. But he gives them permission to do things. But as far as being a lawful government, only a common law government, a common law republic, has the authority and empowered by God. But then they have to rest under the king in the king's court, which is our courts of justice, and serve him. And we follow our hearts because he wrote all the laws into our hearts. So we know right from wrong. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Pretty simple. Okay, next question.
Okay, as a follow-up to last week's call, I wanted to share the swampy landscape here in Virginia and ask a question. We recently formed a COS in our county, Loudoun County. The Board of Elections here directs questions about registering to run for office to the State Department of Elections, where there are a myriad of forms universally requiring an affirmation with one of the two parties. I've been told the Office of Committeeman no longer exists in our state. I'll have to confirm that. The position of Grand Jury Administrator and the Executive County Committee doesn't exist, at least in the public domain. With this background, how would you recommend we start to uncover the layers of deceit and deception to reverse and correct the problem?
What state is that?
Virginia.
Virginia.
John, that's the question from the Loudoun County group, and you said that you will meet with them to discuss because they all have questions. There's about five of the fellows that want to talk to you.
Yes, I remember. Okay.
So that's supposed to be tomorrow night.
Right. Well, I'll give a general answer to this to some degree because I have written a paper. I did some research on this on designating petitions because the whole process of the committeemen, herein is the power and the authority of the committeemen. And anybody can join. They restrict it to a certain number of people because they got to control it, number one. The true committeemen are not restricted. You can have 100 people, you can have 1,000 people in your county participating. The more the merrier, because then the easier the job is to run the papers and give the people, you know, the opportunity to vote for this person or that person. But they have a job. The job of the committeemen is to get people onto the ballot. And they do that by designating petitions. And there is a law that if you leave your party, if you don't have a party membership, if you're not a Republican, a Democrat, you have no party affiliation at all. You go down to the Board of Election, you remove yourself from the party, you have no party affiliation. You can walk designating petitions for anyone. Anyone. If you're a Republican, you can only walk for Republican. Therein is the statutory restrictions. And that's only one of many restrictions, and that's why they statutorized the committeemen. Okay? So there is a New York law. There's also some U.S. codes that support the process of anybody interfering with the elections and the process and any committeeman walking for the papers. Each particular individual, depending on the office they're running for, is required to get X amount of, and there's a percentage. They look at a percentage of numbers on how many papers you have to write, have to take in order to get someone on the ballot. So, for instance, it might be 1,500 signatures you have to get, or it could be 10,000 signatures or 50,000 signatures. You know, for someone like a governor, it would be quite high. For someone like a congressman, depending on the size of their congressional district, you know, there's X amount of signatures that are needed in order to get that person onto the ballot. And that would be for the primary. Okay, and during the primary, you know, the election takes place to see, you know, who would run against who in the general. To be honest with you, and I got to look a little deeper into this, but my thinking is starting to bring me to a point where I'm starting to wonder whether primaries are really even necessary. Although there is a process that is necessary to get people onto the ballot, but I have to think that out some more, and I have to do some more research before I have a conclusion on that. So, but again, if you are a party individual and you want to walk for a Democrat, if you're a Republican, or you want to walk for an independent, or anyone, or maybe even a non-party member, and you want to walk their papers, you can't walk their papers. You can only walk for other Republicans. But there is a form here in New York. There is a law, and that law can be applied to any place, anywhere else, because that's the law under the Constitution. That a law in one state must be recognized in another. And besides that, to deny the process of people, to bring people into office and to participate in that process is a denial of their involvement in the election, which is an unalienable right of government by consent to choose your elected individuals. Okay, so I did write a paper on that, and we will be discussing that in the very near future. I want to look at sovereignty first next week, and then maybe after that we'll see where we go. There's numerous subjects I want to look into. But next question. And by the way, when we do meet with these individuals, as Francine had mentioned, there's about five of them, there may be more, we'll make an announcement so others can come in and sit in and learn also. It'll be on a Tuesday evening probably at 7:15. It'll go an hour, maybe more, but at least an hour, and we'll see what happens for that discussion. But we will be discussing this in greater detail in the very near future. Next question.
Can you speak Spanish, John?
No, not at all.
Okay, that's all the questions, and the last one was in Spanish.
Okay.
I'm sure I can't. I can't do justice to it.
You want to try, right?
No, I don't want to try.
Okay, any announcements before I move over to Gerard?
No, not really. Good.
Okay, great. All right. Gerard, you ready to go?
Can you hear me?
Unfortunately.
I'm getting an awful echo sometimes. I don't know why.
Well, someone may have a mic open.
But Yeah, I'm ready.
Well, I'm passing the board over to you. Brent's not going to be here tonight, so I'm going to hang in the background. I may participate in some of the answers. We have two people, it looks like, in the queue. Anybody who wants to get into the queue, anybody has a question, comment, or correction, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue, and blast away. Gerard,
I want to add to some of what you were talking about with, you know, they're saying my boat and the regulation and all this. What people have to realize is that, you know, the government has gotten away so far away from where it belongs, and so many things have been misinterpreted and just assumed to be correct. Now, you know, on a national level with the Constitution, it's, you know, it says Congress shall make commerce regular between the states. It didn't say regulate, it said make regular. And there's a big difference between to make regular and to regulate. And they have basically interpreted it to be regulate. And really all they're supposed to do is facilitate an easy passage through each state so that one state isn't stepping on the rights of another state. So in other words, if I want to do business in three states over, the two states next to me can't say I can't run my widgets through their state. That's up to Congress to say, no, you have to let him go through. You have to let commerce be regular. But, you know, they've interpreted that as to regulate it. There's no reason that the government has to regulate commerce, really. They need to regulate it in so that the weak, the strong aren't overcoming the weak, that there's no monopolies, that type of stuff. Not just regulate it for the sake of regulating it, and that's where we are today. Same thing with all these licenses and stuff that have been misinterpreted to that you got to ask permission for and all that. And like John, like you say, John, you know, that's more for people that are working in a municipality under the government. Those rules are for them, not for the people. But everything's been turned on its head. And, you know, that national make regular also falls to the states. See, the states have more rights to make rules and regulations for the people than the federal government does. At least they're supposed to. And I think the idea behind that is it's easier for me to control my local government than it is the federal government. So if my state comes in and says, we want to do this, that's something that I can get people together and I can fight and I can put my two cents in. But when the federal government does it, it's very hard because now I got to depend on my senators and my congressmen to go up and bring my voice up there, and it's not as easy or as effective. So our power really is in the local. And so when they regulate things that they're not supposed to, you have more power of changing that on the local level if we get off our hands and we actually go to these meetings. And that's something that Bob Schultz did because he ended up reading the state constitution and he figured out that they're all violating. They're not even following the state constitution when it comes to putting monies together and the things they were doing. They were violating it with impunity, and that's what he discovered. And, you know, we're more powerful on the state level. That's where we need to be active, and that's kind of what our committees of safety are teaching us to get active at the county level. That is the seat of power. For each person is your county, and that's where we need to take control. So I just wanted to add that to it. You know, saying, why do I need this sticker? Why? Well, you know what? If it's a local thing, get together with the local people, and like John says, discuss it. Come together with everybody in that area. If you're living in a boating community where there's lots of lakes and stuff, those people need to get together and figure out what kind of controls they want to put on themselves. And at least it comes from them. It doesn't come from some centralized area that you have no control over. So that's just my two cents on how I look at that stuff. But anyway, let's get to some of these questions here and see where we go. I don't know why I can't see the whole board, but I can see the ones that are in the queue, so I won't worry about it. But this whole thing's got me messed up. Anyway.
Hi there. You just unmuted me, Gerard.
Yes,
I did. This is Rob in Pennsylvania.
Just real quick, I got the same problem you got, Gerard. I can't see. I can only see the people on the queue, but I don't see all the attendees. So I don't know why.
I just unmuted Rosalyn. Mm-hmm. I don't even see her. I don't know where she's at.
You just clicked on the question?
Yeah, I hit next question, and she said you unmuted me. Now, was she in the bottom of that list?
I don't know, but she can go right now.
Well, go ahead. Well, I'll see next time. I'll pay attention to the bottom and the top. Go ahead.
Okay. I think that you said the list only had two in it, so I don't know if it matters. Bottom.
No, three. There's
that's
more.
Right now.
More.
Actually, with you.
Okay. Okay. Well, actually, John, when you were reading from about the bar, I saw that the document said a COS Word, COS introduction Word. So looks like you have that document on your computer, but I don't know of any handbook or what document has that information. I would like to know the source of that information.
I have a copy of it. Yeah, that is really kind of in a lot of places. I know I have it in my book, a lot of information. I know on the website we have some.
I was looking in the book. I couldn't find it in the book.
Government Consent, the book I wrote?
Right, that was a 15-page document, and there's a section you do mention subversion in the book, but I don't see
I'm going to do a page on this and maybe even create a handbook on this, on why we the people need to get rid of political parties and our association.
Well, that history is fantastic. Could you Skype me that, please?
The paper I read from?
Yes.
Yeah, are you on my Skype list?
Well, I am connected with you on Skype. We only chatted a couple times, but...
All right, just send me a note asking for it and give me a day or two, because I got a lot of notes underneath because I'm still working on that paper because I'm writing a lot of the stuff in that paper. But I'll send you what I got so far on the pages between the bar and also the political parties. So,
okay, I appreciate it because, like I say, phenomenal. And everybody, I mean, I can listen to this over and over again, but I need to have
that. And this will be available up under today's issues, come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, and I'll be posting this maybe tomorrow up there.
Yeah, I understand, but I need a written copy, so
I'll drop
it. Thank you.
I'll definitely drop it.
Okay.
I know I got something even more expanded than that, I think.
And
let me see what I could do, but I'll at least you get that a copy of that one.
Yeah, it'd be nice if you could just post it somewhere on the website so that everybody can.
Oh, yeah, it will eventually be a page. We're going to, why we should get rid of these things. So.
Okay, sounds good. All right, thank you so much.
I
am done. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see now. We're going to get Heather Lee or we're going to get Daniel. I hit next question. Neither one of them moved. Did somebody get unmuted?
Michael from Michigan.
Okay, Michael from Michigan. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Michael from Michigan.
What's your question? Hello, Michael?
You hear my dog back there. I got to go take her out. I'll be back in a few.
Michael from Michigan. He doesn't look like he's open. How are you?
Yeah, his mic is open, George.
There it is.
Yes, I can see it. But maybe he stepped away.
He must have. All right, I'm gonna move on to the next one. If Michael is not there,
hi, this is Danielle calling in from Northern California.
Yes, how you doing? What's your question?
My question is, I'm wanting to file for Social Security, and they're asking that it actually. Self-employed, non-taxpayer, I've chosen to not pay income tax, and so
I'll be right back.
You're kind of breaking up. I don't know if it's because John's mic's open too, but can you repeat that question? I had a real hard time hearing what you were saying.
My question is concerning filing for Social Security, and they're asking for a W-2 1099 form, and I am a non-taxpayer, which what I mean by that is I've chosen not to pay income tax,
And so I'm wondering, how do I do that without, showing them a W-2 1099 form? Is there a way around that, or that's what my question is about?
I really don't know how to dance between the two systems like that. and it can be very dangerous. But I know there's people that are doing it. I don't know if John has a better answer for you than that. Look, if you've been paying into Social Security, you're entitled to it.
Right.
And why do you need a W-2? Well, they want to know, what they don't know what you paid in. You need to get a statement of what it was that you paid in when you were paying it, when you were filing income tax or whatever. I don't know how long you've been, I don't know how long you have not been filing income tax, But there's lots of reasons why you wouldn't file income tax. Look, you could be a person that made less than $5,000 a year and you weren't required to file. So they have to have a provision for you to put in for the money that they owe you. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you can call them up and say, look, I don't have any of that. I didn't do that. But I paid, I spent, you must have some kind of figure. You must know kind of what you paid in. No. Did you get a statement from the Social Security that says, usually they give you statements periodically that tell you how much you paid in over the life of your working career?
Yeah, I probably need to learn how to do that. But most of my life I've been self-employed. And I haven't paid in, but there were times, that I did work for companies and they did take out. So I need to.
Yeah. So you're
out.
at least entitled to the minimum. You know what I mean? But if you're a true sovereign and you really removed yourself, guess what? They won't want to give you anything because it's like you removed your citizenship. So you don't get any of the benefits of that 14th Amendment citizen. So it's a kind of a hard pill to swallow, and yeah, I think you do have a case, but as far as putting it in and winning it, that's another story, and that's going to happen only after the IRS goes away, which they may be gone now, but I don't know. I mean, I know plenty of people that are sending their income tax and still.
Yeah, I know.
So somebody's taking it. Somebody's collecting it.
Yeah, they are. That's for sure. All right, sounds like I should probably just not even go there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, if you don't want trouble, it's best you keep your head down. That's what I found.
Yeah.
When you're quiet and because unless you got hundreds of thousands of dollars you're holding, that you're not a target. You know what I mean? They actually look at everybody. They're supposed to. When Reagan was in office, they did this big reset and they weren't supposed to be chasing people, spending, $100,000 or hundreds of thousands of dollars to collect $1,000, and that's what they were doing.
Yeah, but they're just liars.
Yeah, I understand, and they don't care. But
just real quickly, once devolution has come to pass, which should be this year, you won't have to worry about it no more. The Federal Reserve will be shut down. Income tax is unlawful. It's in the Constitution. No direct tax. That's a direct tax. And so that won't be a problem to any of the people.
Well, under if they institute NESRA, you'll get that money back. Any money that you have sent them.
All the people will get something because we've been robbed.
Right. And they're going to look at, they have figures. They know what she paid in through her life. You know what I mean?
That's true.
And they can, and technically you should get three times back because under common law, that's the prescription because they wronged you and they took your money. So now they owe you three times. And believe me, there is enough money because they've robbed all the gold in Fort Knox and all the gold all over the place and they have it all. And so they can redistribute it to us and it won't even hurt them at all.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's the kind of the short, quick answer. So
all right.
Just have patience. Things are going to happen here in the next 6 months, for better or for worse.
I hear you. Thank you.
Walk away for a second, but I'd like to just comment on NESRA. I've read through that paper, and it makes sense, and so on and so forth. But I have not been able to find a valid paper on that anywhere. The paper that's floating around, it is a common sense paper, though.
Mm-hmm.
And look at, once we seize the property, which is probably 80% of the of the economy of the world, or more, 90% or more. All the properties are seized, all the monies, the gold, the silver, and taken away from these all these criminals, because you can't let the criminals keep it. It's got to go back to the people. And it's not just the people of the United States, it's the people of the world. Although the United States, people of the United States will probably get a fair big chunk of that because of our economic level. But everyone, we've been robbed. We've been robbed.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. I want my money back.
Yes. Well, thank you for the call. It was great, educational. I appreciate it, and I'll be listening next week.
Okay. See you then.
Thank you. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, next question. Let's see. Let's try.
It's Heather Lee.
Heather Lee. I opened her. Why does it still have a question mark?
Did you hit the next question?
There we go.
I unmuted her. Okay. She's unmuted.
Thank you, Francine.
You're welcome.
Hi, Heather Lee. What's up?
Heather Lee from Michigan. Okay. All right. There's somebody awake in Michigan. Anyway, a couple of things here. Let me just address the permit thing. I have a comment about that because Michigan is champion about permitting and licensing everything. The DNR of Michigan is just love their job, and they're the ones that are supposed to take care of and regulate the environment. Okay, that means the woods and the trees and the flowers and the bees and the deer. Yeah.
Yeah, but as Gerard had mentioned, they're not here to regulate. They're here to make regular.
Well, yeah.
Open it up to the people.
Let me finish, John.
Yep.
I'm getting there. Anyway, the whole thing is, in the state of Michigan, they're rampant. And the thing is, we the people need to really rein them in and bring them down, because what they do in the licensing, hunting is a big deal here. The big buck, the 20-pointer buck. Yeah. Well, the thing is, the DNR, we have caught them killing off herds of deer so that they can get those, regulate those licenses. Instead of, they're wasting, they kill them off. They don't say anything. They kill them off in secret. And I think they burn them or something.
So they're calling the herd. They're not letting the hunters do it, in other words.
Yeah. Well, the problem being is there's a lot of people that are hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you buy a license, and if you are caught getting a deer and you don't have you don't dance their dance, you have to apply for a doe permit. You have to apply for a buck permit. And then there's only so many that are given in so many areas and this and that. And we tell you what we're going to do. And this is how we manage for you because you're so stupid. And then they go and kill lots of them and they don't tell anybody. I'll tell you what, I'd like to come after them. So anyway, this is the thing that the people have to do in these committees of safety and taking hold on the government is regulating the regulators and telling them where to put it and stopping them.
Amen to that. But I do want to make a point here that's, I think, an extremely important point. First of all, no one should have to pay for a license. Registering for certain things like going out and hunting and particular state deer season or some other season or whatever, I think it is important that they are able to monitor, the stock of deer or whatever, how many deer there are, and we don't want to kill them off. So it does kind of make some sense that maybe they may say, hey, this season you can only take two deer or something. And maybe by the end of the season it will be more if people haven't taken as many as they were concerned about being taken. So there has to be some kind of a monitoring system, and the state needs to set that up. But absolutely, it should be free. And we should respect that and do whatever we have to do.
I think the
problem is that they just abuse everything. You give them a little power, you give them an inch, and they take a mile.
and they just get nuts. They just get nuts.
Well,
you
that's
know, what
your committee
I gotta
of
do my, be important in my job, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's where the committee of safety will take care of them, and if you follow the plan and the layout from the Edgar County Watchdog, which we're going to do a page on that for them so that people can read that, look at that, watch a video or two, and then make a connection to them to get assistance and have them come out and speak to your committee of safety and help you in these things, because that's what they're doing. And so we'll set that up. You know, hopefully soon. You know, it's just another more work.
Yeah, I just think that really is something. It's a big deal in the state of Michigan for, you know, there's seasons, and then you've got these drawings, and then you got to pay these big fees for the drawings, and even if you don't get drawn, and I mean, they're just breaking in.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, again,
literally bucks.
Absolutely. But again, let me make a note, and herein is the importance of the Committee of Correspondence. Because if a committee in a particular county has an idea and it's bigger than the county, you know, we need to do something on a statewide or a congressional-wide area or whatever the case may be, well, that's where the job of the Committee of Correspondence will make connections with other committees that, and then you get together to discuss the idea of what you're trying to do, and maybe they'll agree with you, and then you got two or three counties, and you got 10 counties. You know, you're gathering together, because if you're trying to make a statewide change, you need more than one county to deal with that problem.
Mm-hmm.
Although, of course, you do have a state representative that you have control of, but so does all the others, and that's why you want to get connected together. And then if we're all requiring our state representatives or our federal, you know, congressional, you know, represented Congress in a federal level or whatever the case may be, you know, collectively we're requiring them to do the right thing. One of the things I think we have to press upon the people, the idea to think about and work with other counties across the whole United States, is to deal with our congressmen to get rid of the rules that they have and get common sense rules. And if they need help writing those common sense rules, we'll write them for them. But they got to get rid of the rules, because right now these chairmen of these different committees are so powerful, they don't allow things to come to the floor. They stifle, they silence people, and nothing gets done that they don't want to get done. And therein is the party problem. So.
And they all fight for power in funding.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, if they don't want somebody, they want the funding instead of somebody else, they'll move them. And, in you know, this is just it's a power pull in the legislatures. And,
well, actually, and that's a good way to get rid of them, too, you know, is get your representative to cut their funding on some of these ones that are just useless. You know, some of these positions are very hard to get rid of. Just like for instance, it's kind of off the subject, but it's saying all those appointed senior executive service members that have a lifetime appointment and they can't control them. The way to get rid of them is don't pay them, and they'll disappear. And that's certainly within the power of the executive branch and some other ones. So
there is an organization that's trying to. Across the United States, actually, and they met here recently. I can't remember what they're called. Anyway, but there's some parts of it that I don't agree with, but the part that I do agree with is the fact that they're trying to remove these lifers, these old, moldy lifers that have gotten themselves so comfortable and are feeding like a bunch of parasites off of we the people, and we're financing their houses, their cars, their dinners, their breakfast, their lunch, and you know, their toilet paper, and it's ridiculous for a lifetime.
Yep.
Yeah, they need to be removed. They're old and moldy and useless.
Yeah, well, these people in the deep state that have these positions, they've even recently said over the past year or two or more, they've said things like, well, look, the president's come and go, we're still here, you know, as if they have some power or authority over the president or can ignore the president or whatever the case may be.
Arrogant.
And that's what they're doing, because, like, if the president puts something out that's supposed to go to the different committees and the congressmen and the senators, if they don't carry it to them, they don't get it, and there's nothing he can do. Well, you know, there should be something he could do, but right now the way the system is, You know, I mean, we talked about when Trey Gowdy was over there being a tough guy, and he goes, well, I can't do anything because the committee won't let me. I mean, I never heard of anything so ridiculous. You know, they won't let me bring it up. You know, that's yeah. that's
they,
we
they
should never have,
they don't
a,
have you don't have
that kind
freedom
of, power.
Of speech. Right. You don't have freedom of speech, and that has to stop. You know, no, we're not going to hear you on the floor. Just a minute here.
Well, what makes them more powerful than him?
Yeah.
Because they put him in a position, and he's going
to
control.
And the committee men work the same way as them, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we need to get back to the basics, that's for sure.
And the other thing, and regulatory licensing, the right to travel is very specific in the Constitution. And I have utilized that. And, you know, it's not without risk because there are some that even sheriffs that are negligent and uninformed and uneducated in the Constitution, and they will arrest you, yada, yada. But I have fought that, and I travel with the Constitution on my Jaguar. In fact, I went down to Sheriff Darley with Carl once and drove all the way down there to meet, to have lunch with Sheriff Darr and our dear beloved Robert Overhuel. And we had that lovely lunch, and we had a great conversation. We recorded it. Fortunately, we lost it in Robert's files. But we never did get filed, his files, for National Liberty Alliance. I'm his son, by the way, John.
Yeah, anyway, I heard something about that. If someone gets me some contact information, maybe I'll give him a call.
Yeah. Okay. You need to, because he's not listening to anybody else. I tried to get it.
Yeah, try to get me some information. If you get it directly.
I know one person that would have the information.
Give it to me or Jan.
So anyway, I went down there and I parked on Main Street to go in to the restaurant to have this lunch with Sheriff Darr in this interview. And we got all done. We had a great interview, a great talk and everything, and we came out of the restaurant, and I was parked next to Robert on Main Street there, and Sheriff Darr was across the street, and he walked over to talk to Robert, and he stopped, and he looked down at my license plate, and I was kind of smiling. I thought, what's he going to do? Yeah, here's the sheriff of the county.
Did he get out his ticket book?
No. He got out his camera. And he took a picture of it. He says, I love that. He says, I'm going to post it at the sheriff's department to teach the others. I love that. And Carl is he's starting to shake, you know. He's like, oh, no, we're never going to get home. We're never going to get back to the Heavenly House. Oh, no.
I'm surprised he rode with you with that plate on. I'm not right.
Oh, he was a little bit nervous. A little bit nervous going home. And I said, well, but when he saw him take out his camera, he said, classic Constitution. And he says, I love it. And he takes his big picture. I'm going to post this.
Well, see, that shows what you can do within a county.
What did the plate say, by the way?
Huh?
What did the plate say?
Well, the plate says it uses, unfortunately, because I can't find any constitutional plate, and I need to find one with the Constitution, what it says on it, but it's a UCC one. It quotes the UCC law.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll take a picture of it or something and send it to you, John. Anyway, I'd like to find one that says the Constitution. Somebody needs to make one.
You connected to me on Skype, right?
Yes, I think I am. I have
drop it
accounts.
In. If not, put my name in. I'll connect with you, but drop it in Skype.
Okay, I think I connected. It doesn't have the flag on it. It does say John Darash, but it doesn't have the flag on it. So I don't know if that's an account.
I don't remember. I only had one. I've never had to go change or make another one. So
Hudson Valley,
the right one.
You're not the same one?
That's me. Huh? That's me. Yeah, I have a flag, and it says SOS on it, an upside-down flag with SOS.
Yeah, I know. I had that on my other account, but on this one, when I typed it in, it just came up with a JD.
Yeah, maybe they censored me.
Oh, dear. Anyway, yeah. I sent you a thing. Anyway, I also like the bar. Is that what you read tonight? I listened to the one on YouTube, which was really, really good, John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd done one a while back, I thought, yes.
And it's excellent. It's just excellent. And really, that needs to be referenced on our website because...
Well, under the Committee of Safety, I'm going to do
something. I'm surprised YouTube still has it up.
It does.
It's on Rumble, I think. I don't know that it's on... It could still be on YouTube, yeah. But I should have it up on Rumble also.
Look, they're going to do a big push to start censoring things more. And anybody that's using Chrome browsers, you won't get anything through. So you got to make sure that you have something alternate like Brave or something like that. They're going to really start censoring here in the next three weeks or so as all this stuff is dumped on the people, all this evidence.
Oh, by the way, right before this program started, I had my TV going. I was watching something on YouTube and something came up and it was Chuck Grassley on the floor of Congress. And it was just up there. And I downloaded it real quick because I think they're going to delete it. And he was revealing the Biden crime family on the floor of Congress. It was amazing. I'm going to post it up on our Rumble page, and I'll also put it up probably under Devolution. Anybody that doesn't know about Devolution, you go to Today's Issues and click on Devolution, and a lot of videos here. And I'll probably put it right down on the bottom here, an additional information with the Biden crime family.
Well, may I also add to that I was sent something that was on Fox News. And
yeah, that was fake.
Was that fake?
I didn't realize where it came from, or I wouldn't have sent. I sent it out a couple times, and I realized what it was, and
what happened is I picked up on it, and I was listening to it, and I paused it because it was this morning. I was listening to it, and I went to make some bacon and get a cup of coffee. And I was telling my wife, they're reporting about this on Fox. I couldn't believe it. But when I came back and clicked the button to finish the rest, it turned out that they were making the point that it was fake. And Justice Thomas's wife picked up on that and sent it out to some people or something, and then they're attacking her about it for fake news and stuff. But it was it wasn't true.
Well, how about the one from that I just received from Mike Adams? Now, Mike Adams did get some inside information, and he said it was qualified. Otherwise, he wouldn't say anything about it. But he was referring to the fact that the Pentagon and some of the minions in the Pentagon are kind of running scared. And so some of the Dems that voted for Biden see that they need to jump ship because they're not going to win. And the fact
there's about 30 of them that are not running for office this next coming up election.
Yeah, well, this is out of the Pentagon. And so the thing is that they're seeing that if they don't turn, they're turning from black hats to white hats, is what he's saying.
Well, part of it is because they don't want to. Biden is planning on completely decimating the American economy.
Oh yeah.
And these guys don't look. They got a good thing going, and they were for him and all that. But they're looking at things and they're going, this is going too far, and they can't.
Right.
He's panicking the American people for food, telling them there's not going to be any food soon.
Well, there won't be if they keep it up.
I know.
Stop, there won't be because.
Well,
Because when you cut that oil off from the Ukraine and Russia, that's the fertilizer, that's the diesel that runs the tractors and the trailers and blah, blah, blah. And it's already started. It's already started. There's already shortages, and it's not going to go away overnight. So it's going to, you know, we have to be on this diligently.
To open up the oil coming out from up north, north in Alaska and stuff, takes quite a while to really get that back up and running again. Is that true, do you know?
I know that when you shut them down, it makes a big problem, because that oil has to be, that pipeline needs to be heated, because that stuff is like molasses or worse.
Well, hopefully someone's doing something.
So it gets hard in the pipelines, and it's just a big mess.
Hopefully someone's priming that system so that when devolution really kicks in high gear, that we can start to get things back up and running as quick as possible. I mean, anybody that hasn't prepared themselves to be able to live for a month and more, I mean, you know, I'm up to 6 months at least of food in my house. So you got to have a few months, because what's coming down is you're not going to be able to get anything.
Yeah, the thing that scares me the most is fuel oil and gasoline.
Yeah, that is a big problem.
You can have plenty of food, but if you don't have electric and you don't have gas for your stove or whatever, it's like you're gonna live hand to mouth, opening up cans.
You need a wood stove, and you need wood.
Right.
And you need tanks that you have subsidiary fuel.
Well, yeah. If there's no fuel, there'll be no food, because it takes trucks to move.
Right. And you
need
things.
I think there will be some fuel. It's just going to be so expensive. And anybody that doesn't have silver and gold laid aside to be able to afford it, you know, they're going to be stuck not having been able to get fuel. Because the dollar is going to be worthless soon. I mean, China's, choking on it. The Middle East is choking on it. Russia, they no longer want to accept the dollar anymore.
Listen, we got 1 minute, and I just want to open up Michael from Michigan. He's been waiting.
There he is. Okay, thank you. Bless you.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll talk to you, John, on your Skype.
All right, yeah. Okay. If you don't get me, try back again. You know, I get so many things going on, but I should be at my desk most of the day tomorrow. Let me take a quick look.
That's good. Yeah, I know you're going to get a hold of Jim, too. So, okay. Thank you. Blessing.
Okay, Michael, what's your question or your beef? You got 1 minute. Oh, maybe he's not there.
There's Anonymous out there, too.
All right, I'll open Anonymous since we're like, I'm going to be going over here.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'll open just in case he comes back.
Yeah, he is. I didn't touch him. Who's that?
Yes, my name's Scott.
Okay.
Right over here in Georgia.
Where are you?
To the lake. Yes, go ahead.
No, go ahead. What state are you in?
To the lady about the free travel and no license and all.
Yeah.
There's a Magna Carta article, I think it's 61 or 62, that speaks about sojourning to and from the, realm of England.
Uh-huh.
And tearing around as long, not being charged or whatnot. And, that's an ancient right of ours. And it goes all the way to the Articles of Confederation. And there's an article there. It talks about free ingress and regress, and all that is secured in the Article 4, Section 2, rights, privilege, immunities. That'll help our argument. There's also a law case.
Well, right to travel is also common sense too. So, I mean, that's where I would rest most of it, is on common sense. You know, when you get a court of justice, you'll get justice, but until then, you won't get it.
Well, a lot of this stuff they did gradually, and like they would institute, just like when income tax first came in, they said, this is just a temporary thing to help us with the war effort. Well, temporary never left, and it was only 4%, and people didn't care. And so then sneakily, and again, like around Christmas time or something, they made it permanent, and they snuck in the Federal Reserve and the 16th Amendment and blah, blah, blah. So it ended up being permanent. But that's because we're not vigilant.
Yep, exactly.
People have to be educated and active.
Yeah.
To Mr. Ash's comment about common sense, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. The courts of justice, they're blocking those. I've been fighting this for a long time.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be in the courts that are not a record, you got to build your record. And that's why I'm telling these different articles of these different constitutions.
Well, absolutely. And you definitely got to build your record and open up a court of record. And at some point in time, I mean, in most cases, you're not going to get justice now, but you can come back later on as long as you've built your record, like you said. That's the key.
And I think it's going to go quicker than you think it is. I think these courts and stuff are going to turn around quicker than you think they will, because the local judges are going to get it. And so when you bring that argument in, and you say, look, this isn't Magna Carta, you do a little history, you give the history lesson in that, he's going to feel more comfortable about going with it than he would like today. You know, once the mood of the country changes, these judges will get braver than they are right now. They're afraid to make any decisions at all because they're locked down by that bar association, you know.
You know, I don't know if it's, you know, I'm sure there are judges or magistrates for profits out there that are real hell-bent about trying to boss you around, but I'm sure there's some justices of the peace out there that are not courageous yet, but I hope they're out there and they'll step up and become courageous.
Well, they're just, they have a lot of ability to retaliate on anybody that does the right thing, and that's the way it's been. Yeah. They rule through fear. And they make an example out of somebody, and that keeps everybody else in line, you know. Mm-hmm. So we have to break that cycle, that's all. You know?
Exactly. Because we the people, we owe allegiance to keep these people accountable. You know?
Right. Exactly.
And, you know, I'm working on a big case myself, and I got a several petitions, it's like Mr. Durash stated earlier, about getting a hold of our representatives. Well, you know, that offer and acceptance rule about, you know, contracting with the United States Postal Service, and they don't rebut your, they accept it, but they don't contact you back and offer. You got them in a contract deal, then. I'm working on all that. But another thing is, I got an email about today's show being on the Traitorous American Bar Association, and my arguments that I'm going to be making, my points of conflict. I'm going to bring up the Traitorous American Bar Association.
Okay.
So I'm going to be staring the fight.
So you're going to start right off by kicking the lawyer in the knee. I can see. Okay.
I don't even want to speak to no lawyers.
if you missed the part of the program where we spoke for about 45 minutes on the Bar Association, I don't know if you were here at the time, but if not, it'll be available tomorrow. Under today's issue, nationallibertyalliance.org, highlight today's issues, and come down to NLA Monday Open Forum videos, and you'll be able to see it there. Last week we did the political parties have got to go, and this week was the bar. Next week we're going to talk about sovereignty.
Yes,
so,
yes. I like those topics you're covering, especially the American Bar Association, because they are illegitimate.
We're going to look at democracy versus republic also. We got a lot of subject matters we really got to kick in. We've done some of this before, and I've done some videos on it.
Well, where's that tape that Heather Lee was talking about that you made on the Bar Association, she said was really good? Is that in our videos?
I'll have to take a look. It should be probably, well, let me see. Right now, let's go over to, I think maybe under today's issues. No, not there. I'm not sure where it's at. I don't know,
but she said it came up on YouTube. But we do have.
Well, we also have it up on Rumble, because I downloaded everything off of YouTube. Well, actually, I already had it on my computer. Anything that was up on YouTube is now up on Rumble, and I'm only posting to Rumble now. I don't even bother with YouTube anymore.
So you could go up on Rumble and look for those videos, and he's got
Absolutely.
One up there that the whole video is on the Bar Association, and
at
least it's pretty good.
What's the channel name?
Well, it would be National Liberty Alliance.
On Rumble.
Yeah, rumble.com/ National Liberty Alliance. You should be able to get to it. And let me see if I can.
Would probably be a good resource for you. You know what I mean?
Oh,
yeah.
I would like to catch you, because I'm going to challenge these guys, and they ain't going to like it.
OK, Okay, let's see if I got this up here. It was on the bar they were looking for, right?
Yeah.
American Bar Association and Treason. It's 23 minutes. And this is it here.
Okay.
Let's see if it plays a little bit here. Today, with almost a half a million bar members, 80,000 of them working in Washington, D.C., have perverted the rule of law, deprived we the sovereign. Okay, we can't go through all that tonight, obviously, but it's 23 minutes, so it's another one. And the other one that we did tonight, like I said, will be up also on our page. And why don't we, real quick, I see Jim's in here, too. I'm going to unmute him if he wants to pipe in, because we're going to have to close down in a minute or two. We're already late.
Yeah, we're.
Jim, you got something you want to bring up real quick?
Jim in Pennsylvania. Yeah, I'll be very brief. First of all, I got to apologize. I tried to arrange to have NLA speak at our meeting in northern Pennsylvania, over in Susquehanna County, and then we're going to meet in Erie next month. But they cannot make the arrangement at this point. So I just want to give you an update on that. I tried the best I could.
If you can get it, let me know, and we'll invite as many people as we can and make it as big an event as possible. You know, we'll invite our membership in the general area, and we'll see what we can do if we can. Also, I think it was Stephen maybe last week from Connecticut. He was supposed to call me. I haven't heard from him unless he connected with me, and I missed it somehow. But I don't know if you're here tonight. Try to connect with me tomorrow. Call the other number. I should be at my office at least, and we can connect, because I'd like to go to Connecticut. You got eight counties there. I think Rhode Island's got two or three. We can do Connecticut and Rhode Island all in one shot. I'd love to do that.
Okay. Hey, listen. You were talking about no fees for the fishing and hunting license. You know, I'm gonna fax my representatives and senator, state senator and representative, and tell them not to do it, and the governor, but. The question is, what do we say when they say, well, how are we going to fund
Because we already paid for it. Maybe they should stop spending money where they shouldn't be spending it, and they'll have plenty of money to do what needs to be done for the people. They are well-funded. It's not that they're living off of the – that's just more money. In my opinion, it goes into pockets. That's what I think. And it's just more money. That's all it is. They got to stop this. It's just like going to court. They charge us, you know, $410 to get into a federal court. Here in New York, it's $310 to get into a court. We already paid for that. We paid for all of the machines. We paid for the building. We paid for all the people working there. We paid for the judges. We paid for everybody. Why do we have to give them anything more? Justice is free. And it should never be charged for. You read that in the Magna Carta also, and you'll read it in other places.
It keeps it out of the riffraff's hands, John. Come on.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, I have one other comment. I could not vote for an attorney for office, okay, no matter how good he talks or anything. Right. However, well, let me just – I'm wrestling with this. How about a constitutional lawyer, like someone like Brent Allen Winters?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
He's not a bar attorney, though. He's not a bar attorney. He does have the license required, I believe, but he's not a bar attorney. And his in his state particularly, I believe, and he'll need to answer this for himself, but I'm pretty sure I heard him talking about it, there is no requirement. So there are some states that don't require you to be a bar attorney in order to practice law. But we do need attorneys that have been schooled in the codes, because that's their main purpose, is the courts of equity. That's where they should be spending their time. In criminal situations, anything I have to do, I don't want a lawyer to represent me. They say only a fool represents themselves, but I say only a fool gets a lawyer to represent themselves. Nobody knows your case better than you. If it's a criminal case and you're guilty, you better go find a lawyer. Other than that, in my opinion, I wouldn't get a lawyer.
Yeah, I do it as I call a lawyer constitutional, but an attorney, I call them, you know, they
but
go by
all,
the...
They're all lawyers, even bar attorneys are lawyers, and look at most of the attorneys that we're dealing with most of the lawyers we're dealing with are attorneys, or they are esquires. A lot of them have the esquire. Once they got their bar license, quote-unquote, in order to practice... that's the problem right there.
So back to the point about supporting and voting for somebody that's not a bar member. I won't vote for them, but how about those a candidate for office that is not a bar member? Would that sound like a good vote then?
I think Thomas Jefferson was that, and some of the
founding fathers were lawyers. Yeah. Madison was a lawyer. Jefferson was a lawyer. A lot of them were lawyers, but they were not bar attorneys. They were tar and feather in the colonies, bar attorneys. That's the British bar bringing in their civil law and all that stuff. That's just
the short answer is it's fine. Okay.
Well, was that your idea?
I said the short answer is they're fine. If they're not a bar attorney, then and they're just a doctor of the law, so to speak, that's fine.
Absolutely. Okay. Lawyers are required and necessary, particularly in equity cases. They have to know the codes and, the statutes to apply in equity cases, and that's what codes and statutes are for, is for equity cases. It's nothing to do with courts of law. Our founding fathers, a lot of our founding fathers were lawyers, and, we have Brent, he's a lawyer, and he's not a bar attorney, and he has problems in courts because he bumps into it all the time.
Hey, okay, listen, I'm going to close, but I wanted to ask you, John, I wasn't following. You said you talked with Stephen. Is he from the Constitution Party?
No, I talked with someone, I think his name was Stephen. I have to go back and listen to make sure. He was supposed to call me last week after Monday night program in order to discuss a plan to deal with Connecticut. Connecticut lost their sheriffs. We're already working on that. And I had been out to Connecticut, and we connected with a lot of counties 10 years ago. And I'd like to go back out there and really push heavily on the committees of safety. We can do all 8 counties and probably the 2 or 3 counties in Rhode Island. I think they got 3 counties. I'm not sure, but they've only got a couple. And we could do both states at the same time in a centrally located area and get a lot of committees of safety going and a lot of support when we go after the legislators and the governor to force them to bring back the sheriffs, for they unlawfully remove sheriffs without a and it's even in the Constitution, it's required that they be elected, I think, every 4 years in Connecticut. So how did they go about doing that? They did it through a referendum, but that can't even be done. Even the people can't get rid of a sheriff because it's part of the common law. Sheriffs are required. It's part of the system.
Okay, John, I'm Pennsylvania, remember?
I know, yes.
I thought through your talk to somebody, and my question is,
I remember
somebody from the Constitution.
I remember, and we're hoping to get together on something out there in Pennsylvania.
Because we were meeting in northern Pennsylvania, wasn't far from New York, in Erie and Susquehanna County.
Yeah, we could pull a lot of counties from New York in there, absolutely. A lot of counties in Pennsylvania, we could pull a lot of people in that section and try to get as many committees of safety going as possible.
Okay,
and we have 77 of them nationwide, but we need 3,000. At least 2,000 to really have a good, strong stronghold.
Okay, I just wanted to touch base. Good night.
Okay. Thank you. Good night. Okay, are we done?
Yep, we're done. Everybody, thank you. Tune back in same time, same station next week.
Godspeed, everyone.
Yep. Bye-bye.